When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, it's emergency podcast time. Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. Howard, I will say this first. A year from now, 2 years from now, I would like to see an oral history of the last, say, 15 minutes of this year's NBA trade deadline with the Raptors and the calls they were getting about Kyle Lowry, the Rockets sitting there with an asset in Victor Oladipo and maybe not knowing what they were going to do with him. I mean, so many moving parts. And look, it always comes down to the final minutes. But it felt like this year, Howard, so many deals came down to quite literally the last minute where these teams got deals done just in time to beat the clock on the NBA trade deadline.
Yeah, and look, I will say this about this trade deadline. We thought at a minimum, despite all the speculation about us, too many teams competing for the playoffs, the play-in tournament's going to screw up the trade deadline. Everybody's a contender. There's not enough sellers. You knew there'd be activity. And it was only a question of like, how big, how important, how much fun would it be? Because we love the fireworks of trade deadline. But I thought at a minimum, we would get three serious names changing addresses. Kyle Lowry, Victor Oladipo, and Aaron Gordon. We got two out of the three. So credit there. Only one of the three ended up being, I think, a good deal for the team that moved him. That was the Gordon deal. We'll get to the Rockets later. Lowry not being traded is a minor disappointment, right? He is.
Let's set that up. Yeah. Let's set that up and start there. Yeah. I mean, Kyle Lowry was one of, if not the biggest name on the trade market. There was an expectation all day Thursday that the Raptors at some point would just trade him to the highest bidder. That expectation seemed to ramp up earlier in the day when the Raptors traded Norman Powell to the Trailblazers in exchange for a young guard in Gary Trent Jr. However, after 3 p.m. Eastern time, Kyle Lowry remained with the Toronto Raptors. The last two teams, Miami and the Lakers, they didn't put together the kind of offer that appealed to Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster in that front office. And Lowry is going to finish the season as a member of the Raptors. So I guess your reaction to that, Howard, Lowry not being traded on Thursday.
And I want to throw in one other team into just this discussion, which is that when the Sixers made the move for George Hill a couple hours before the trade deadline, that seemed like a clear signal that the Sixers had already decided, oh, we are not paying the price that Masai Ujiri is looking for. We're not getting Kyle Lowry. Let's go to our cheaper backup plan of George Hill and pull ourselves out of the running. That's the way that looked to me, was that they had already decided the asking price is too high. And I think that was at least potentially, I may be reading overly into it, but it seemed like that was a signal that the Raptors' price was at a fairly high point and that the Raptors weren't desperate to do this. And so, look, the Lakers side of it, it's a disappointment for the Lakers not to get Kyle Lowry. The Miami side of it, it's a disappointment not to get Kyle Lowry, but they got Victor Oladipo, which is a pretty nice and impactful piece for the stretch run and to try to get back to the finals. I don't consider this a disappointment for the Raptors, Chris. You may disagree, but I look at this as yes. And as you know me, I've been saying since the offseason it was time to trade him and shift younger, rebuild around Siakam, Van Vliet, Ananobi, their young core, and trade Lowry at this stage because of his age, his contract, his pending free agency. It's time. So I'm not changing my mind on that, but I don't think it's a tragedy that they didn't move him. He means a ton symbolically to that franchise, to that city, to that fan base, to that locker room. They still can make the playoffs. They're in 11th. in a year where we have a play-in tournament that goes down to 10th, and we know they're better than what they've shown so far, and his value to that team in terms of his leadership is huge. Another couple months of Kyle Lowry helping Siakam find his way and become the franchise star that he's supposed to be, whatever else he can impart to these guys and keep them competitive, it's not the worst thing in the world. And if you weren't going to get the value that you thought you should for him, I'm totally fine with them keeping him. And maybe he walks away to join another contender in the offseason. Maybe you re-sign him for a couple years at a much lower number and make sure he retires as a Raptor. Those are not terrible outcomes.
Well, I would disagree, because I don't believe that Kyle Lowry will be a Raptor next year. And if you're operating with that foundation, is it not better to get something back in return and not nothing? And while I wasn't all that sold on what the Lakers were offering, if they weren't going to include Horton Tucker in a deal for Kyle Lowry, I mean, Dennis Schroeder's a fine player. Some of the other pieces are okay, but it doesn't excite me long term. I would have liked to have gotten my hands, if I were Toronto, on Duncan Robinson. Like, Duncan Robinson, a really good young player, not having the kind of shooting year he had last year, but still a high-level shooter in this league, 26 years old. I think he would have fit into what the Raptors are trying to do long-term. Now, yes, Robinson is going to be a free agent this summer. He's going to have suitors. We have seen the asking price, or the going rate, rather, for shooters in this league. We saw it last summer, where Davis Bertans got $85 million. Why am I blanking on Brooklyn Nets Joe there? Joe Harris. Brooklyn Nets Joe.
Yeah,
let's call him that from now on. Brooklyn Nets Joe. Joe Harris got $75 million. So Duncan Robinson's going to have teams out there looking to pay him. But I would have liked to have seen Toronto get Duncan Robinson, see how he plays alongside Fred VanVleet, see how he fits alongside Pascal Siakam, and maybe he's the piece you're looking at going forward. That, to me, was the deal that was missed out on by Toronto. Maybe you're right, Howard. Maybe Kyle Lowry is so in love with being the greatest Raptor of all time that he signs next year on a short-term deal. Or if he walks away, then are we looking back on this 6 months from now saying, you know, there was a missed opportunity by Toronto and not getting at least something for Kyle Lowry?
Yeah. All right, so 2 points. We don't know if they could have gotten Duncan Robinson, and it's maybe because...
I believe they could. I believe they could. I could be wrong, but I was told that Duncan Robinson was available in that trade.
So they still would have had to find a way to get to... It's not the full $30 million, but I think Bobby Marks has said it was $24 million that you needed to cobble together to make the trade legal, and that's a real challenge. That was always going to be a very steep challenge in any Kyle Lowry deal, because you were dealing with other teams that were all over the cap and in some cases had hard cap issues. So finding a way if you could just swap him straight up for Duncan Robinson, maybe the deal gets done. But it was going to be complicated by cap issues and trying to make up Lowry's deal. And then my other thought is this. You know, yeah, I, you're right. Probably he walks away this summer. Probably you lose him for nothing, and maybe you could have gotten something today, Duncan Robinson or something else. There's still the possibility in a league where most of the teams are capped out, and certainly all the contenders are capped out, and that's where you expect Lowry's going to want to go, you might still be able to use him in a sign-and-trade with his bird rights and get him to some of those same teams. Maybe the Lakers, maybe the Heat, maybe the Clippers. There will be others out there.
And potentially create a giant trade exception in the process. Sure. I get that there are things you can do in the offseason.
Yeah. So it's not a total loss. His value to them always went beyond his numbers, the totality of Kyle Lowry had enough value to Toronto that you didn't have to trade him for anything less than whatever you considered to be the right deal. And I'm okay with him staying there. It's not the same as, say, the Rockets absolutely positively needing to move Victor Oladipo and get real value because he was the most substantial, tangible piece of the Harden deal, and then flipping him for nothing. And by the way, that may have come into this too. I mean, I don't know from the Heat's end of it the exact order of events, but if you're looking at trading for Kyle Lowry and it costing you Duncan Robinson and maybe Tyler Hero and some other stuff, or getting Oladipo basically for free for Olynyk and Avery Bradley and a pick swap? I mean, you might as well go for the free guy. I mean, they're not the same player. They have different kinds of value to them. You can make the case that Lowry would have been better for them, whatever. That's fine. Oladipo's a really nice pickup, and they got him for nothing.
Well, let's set that up then, too. And this goes into kind of the last 15 minutes of the trade deadline, when it seemed, you know, after 3 o'clock, there was no information about Oladipo being traded. It seemed like the Rockets were going to hold on to him through the trade deadline. Then, at the very last minute, last second, you hear that Miami has acquired Oladipo for Avery Bradley, Kelly Olynyk, and that swap rights in 2022, which I believe is swap rights with one of the Brooklyn picks, or the Brooklyn pick that the Rockets have that year. So there's the potential that could be of value. It wouldn't be of value if it was the Rockets' swap rights, since it's pretty safe to say Miami will be better than the Rockets in 2022. But if it's Brooklyn, maybe you can, maybe there's something that comes of that. Let's start with the Oladipo side of this. Oladipo is not having a great season. He's putting up decent numbers, but he is highly inefficient. And I had a lot of executives that I talked to the last few days, Howard, say to me, like, do you think Victor Oladipo is going to regret not taking that two-year contract extension, the 2 years, $45 million he could have gotten from the Rockets about a month ago? I mean, a year ago, you would have thought Oladipo would command 4 years, $100-plus million, whatever it is, on the open market. Now, I'm not so sure, in part because of Oladipo's play, in part because I'm not entirely convinced there will be a lot of big spenders this summer. Even the teams that have cap space, like the Thunder certainly aren't going to be spending on Victor Oladipo this summer. I wrote this week, the Knicks' interest in Oladipo is considerably overblown. Like, I don't think that he's highly regarded within the Knicks organization. So Oladipo could have found himself, you know, in a tough situation trying to find a big dollar deal. Now he winds up in Miami, a team that's long liked him. And I think he's a good fit there, because in Miami, he doesn't have to be a primary scorer. He can play off of Jimmy Butler, either as the point guard, or you play Butler at small forward, whatever you want to do with that combination. Positions don't matter in the NBA anymore. And you're playing with a top defensive guy and a second option in Bam Adebayo. Throw in, you know, Tyler Hero. You've got some weapons there where Oladipo doesn't have to carry a team like he did for Indiana for several years. So from a basketball perspective, you know, to me, this is almost a wash in a way for Miami in what you get back in return. Like, Lowry may be a better player, but I'm not sure he's so much more impactful than what Oladipo is going to be for them for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and let's be clear here. You know, they're not getting the Victor Oladipo who made back-to-back All-Star games, All-Star teams with the Pacers a couple of years ago. You know, he has not ever fully recovered from that injury. He has physically, but he's, you know, he's not the same player right now. You know, his efficiency, as you mentioned, is way down. And, you know, PER is a imperfect stat, but PER is set so that if you have a 15, like 15 is the league average year in, year out, the way the model works, 15 is average. And I say that because the Oladipo at his best had a PER of 23 in the 2017-18 season, then was down to 17 PER the next year, was still an All-Star. Since then, it's been 11, and this year 15.4. So he's right around league average. So you're not getting an All-Star, Victor Oladipo, but you are getting a guy who can score, who can make plays, who can get to the basket, and who has some length and some range defensively. And I think his defensive versatility probably puts him a little bit ahead of Kyle Lowry if you're comparing and contrasting the two possible pickups. And this is a really defensive-minded team, of course, the Miami Heat. And you put him in there with Jimmy Butler, who's obviously your primary playmaker and scorer, and Bam Adebayo. Like, this is was already a high-level defensive team, and I think Oladipo makes them that much more versatile in that regard. And when you're going, you know, when you're looking ahead to the playoffs and you're thinking, how are we going to match up with Kyrie and Harden and KD if that's who we have to go through in the playoffs at some point, or really anybody else in your path, but particularly them, having two perimeter defenders of the caliber of Jimmy Butler and Oladipo, and then Trevor Ariza, who they picked up, Andre Iguodala is there. Like, I like what they have along the perimeter to deal with some of those elite offenses that they're going to have to deal with in the playoffs.
Yeah, it was a good deadline, and a good week or so for Miami when you throw in the Trevor Ariza deal. We'll see how much Ariza helps them over the next month or so, given that he was off for so long. I worry about that with an older player and what he's going to be able to contribute. But on paper, Trevor Ariza is a nice fit with that team. And Oladipo, look, I think he can be in Miami long term too. I, you know, Miami's going to try to get creative this summer. Who knows who they go after? But I think they'd be willing to pay Oladipo considerably to keep him around long term if it fits.
Yeah, two quick thoughts on that before we move off of Miami. But one, Oladipo had been tied to them for the last couple of years, even going back to when he was in Indiana, right. And there was a reason that there was all the rumblings there and that he wasn't going to sign an extension there because he didn't want to stay. He wanted to leave, and his primary goal or his first choice was always Miami. And now that the Heat have traded for him, they've got his bird rights, so that helps re-sign him for whatever number they can settle on. And that, you know, the Heat were one of the teams that was always angling for Giannis. And when Giannis came, you know, became, you know, was taken off the market with his extension, they were going to have to find another way to spend the cap room that they had been targeting. And Oladipo may well be, you know, a serious chunk of that.
Yeah, no question. All right. From the Rockets' perspective, this trade needs to be viewed through a broader context, through a broader lens, because it is part of the James Harden deal. Harden traded back in January. Oladipo was the best player that the Rockets got back in return. And that was a curious decision at the time when the Rockets made what was effectively a four-team trade in dealing Harden, because Oladipo was a player who was in a contract year and there were no guarantees that they'd be able to keep him around. So with Oladipo being traded, I won't say it closes the book, because a lot can happen between now and whenever those picks dry up from the Nets. But from a player perspective, right now, in exchange for James Harden, the Rockets got Avery Bradley, Kelly Olynyk, Dante Exum, Rhodey Karuks, and a whole bunch of late first-round picks and swap rights. The first-round picks, which right now don't look like they're going to be particularly good, and the swap rights, which are irrelevant if the Nets are playing like they're playing right now. So, Howard, I'm looking at this on paper, and as we sit and record this in late March, this to me looks like one of the worst superstar trades I've ever seen. It does. Now, again, a lot can happen 3-4 years. They've got those Nets picks into the mid-2020s. We've seen crazier things happen. We've seen crazier things happen in Brooklyn before when the Nets imploded 6-7 years ago. But right now, to only get that return for a top-five player in the NBA... it's not a good look, Howard. Not good at all.
Disastrous. Three-time scoring champion, recent MVP, perennial MVP candidate. And in the when you're making this deal against the backdrop of what the Thunder got not that long ago for Paul George, or what the Pelicans got for Anthony Davis. Yes, the Rockets got a bunch of picks, but as you point out, it's all the Nets picks. Now listen, as you also noted, the Nets have crashed and burned before after making a deal of that nature with the Pierce and Garnett thing, and the Celtics have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum because of it. The Rockets could still make out in a couple years down the road in the draft with using the Nets picks. Or maybe they package those picks to get somebody that changes their course in the next couple of years. We'll see. The book is not written. We'll give them the possibility that they can recover. But as of right now, it's a disaster. It absolutely is, because one, you could have just kept Caris LeVert, a really good young player who is on a cheap contract considering his talent level, and who you could have had as part of your young core moving forward.
And you also could have had Jared Allen. Jared Allen could have been part of that. You could have just done, and I actually checked with Bobby Marks over at ESPN, and I just asked, like, could the Rockets have just done a straight swap? Like, you could admit, could that have worked? And he said, yeah, you could have had Jared Allen and Caris LeVert, and you'd have two starting pieces that could have been part of your team for the next 4 or 5 years. Finances were a part of this, Howard. Yeah. Like,
they always are with the Tillman Fertitta. They always are. I'm giving him a pass on the Jared Allen part only because they had signed Christian Wood to a big contract and they play the same position. Okay. But could you have acquired both LeVert and Jared Allen and then flipped Jared Allen for something else that you could have used? Something, you know,
yes.
Something, right? You immediately flipped Caris LeVert for Oladipo. And there are only a few different ways in which that makes sense. One, You think Oladipo is going to regain his all-star form, and he and John Wall are your backcourt of the foreseeable future. Two, you're going to test him out, and then you're going to re-sign him in the summer. They did offer him a 2-year extension that he turned down, so they clearly had at least some thought of keeping him long term. You flip him at the deadline, or you use him in a sign and trade in the summer if you couldn't flip him at the deadline. When we got close to 3 o'clock and they had not yet moved him, I thought, okay, not necessarily a disaster. They have his bird rights. There are teams that will come chasing him in the summer. Maybe you use him in a sign and trade and you still get some assets back for Victor Oladipo in the summer. And instead, they traded him for the worst. Like, if it were just in a vacuum, Oladipo for those two players, I still wouldn't like it, because even if Oladipo is a little diminished and we don't know if he can regain his form, we at least know he had that form. But Oladipo for Olynyk and Bradley, even in a vacuum, I wouldn't have really liked. But in this particular context, knowing that he was the biggest piece of the Harden deal, and now that part of the Harden deal has become Kelly Olynyk and Avery Bradley, is an absolute disaster. And I'm eager to hear, you know, we're taping this in the afternoon. Rafael Stone, to my knowledge, has not yet spoken on what the Rockets did today. I'll be curious to hear what their rationale is. But as of right now, I just don't see how there's any positive spin.
I mean, players half as good as James Harden have brought back better returns on trades. Half as good. So unless they get creative in the next couple of years, or one of those draft picks turns into, you know, Pascal Siakam, drafted 27th overall, Draymond Green, drafted in the second round, unless they hit on these picks or are able to trade these picks for something real, this will go down as a disastrous trade for Houston. All right, let's talk about the Denver Nuggets for a minute. The Nuggets probably made, I would argue, right up there with Miami and Chicago, one of the bigger deals, plural, of the trade deadline. First, they get JaVale McGee, who, let's not sleep on that deal. That's a pretty decent deal for Denver, which lost Mason Plumlee as a free agent, has been looking for front court help. McGee, still a productive player, championship experience. I think that's a nice trade for the Denver Nuggets. But the big deal was acquiring Aaron Gordon in exchange for a package headlined by Gary Harris and a first-round pick. The Nuggets, and I had been writing and talking about this the last day or so, Howard, the Nuggets decided they were going to be aggressive on Aaron Gordon in recent days. Boston was in the mix for Gordon, but the Nuggets decided they wanted him. And, you know, when Tim Connelly, the GM of the Nuggets, kind of fixates on a guy, chances are they're going to put together the type of trade package that gets the deal done. So the Nuggets get Aaron Gordon into that mix. And I got to tell you, I love the fit of Aaron Gordon in Denver, because Gordon not only can kind of slide right into that 3-4 slot, either alongside Michael Porter Jr. or, you know, replacing him at power forward. He's a springy type of guy who can play multiple positions. He also gives you an above average defender to throw up against a murderer's row of small forwards and power forwards in the Western Conference, whether it's Kawhi Leonard or LeBron or Anthony Davis. I mean, go down the list. There are some great players at Aaron Gordon's position. So, you know, the Nuggets, giving up a first round pick is always a tough thing to swallow. Gary Harris, good player, but I thought they got appreciably better at the trade deadline.
I think they're the winner of the day. I mean, if I want to get cute about it, I'd say the Lakers are the winner of the day, because nobody made the kind of move that clearly puts them ahead of the Lakers, assuming full health by the Lakers. So if the Lakers are fully healthy in the playoffs, they're still the odds-on favorites to come out of the West, I believe. And I don't think anything that happened today changes that. So you could say the Lakers win by the absence of a blockbuster that changed the landscape in the Western Conference or in the NBA period. But if it's just about the deals that were made, the Nuggets had by far the best day. Aaron Gordon is one of those guys who, because of that incredible athleticism and his dunk contest performances, he should have beaten Zach LaVine the 1 year, by the way. He is this really intriguing athlete player who fans love because of the fireworks, but he's been a disappointment overall because, okay, well, he never turned into that 25-point-a-game scorer, or he couldn't lead Orlando anywhere. Context is everything in the NBA, as we both know, and being one of the best teams or one of the best players on a team that just doesn't really have that one transformative guy, all due respect to Vucevic, the Magic were never going anywhere with that group. And so Aaron Gordon had too much responsibility within the context of that team. But putting him on a Nuggets team with Jokic and all of his phenomenal playmaking abilities, the easy shots he's going to get both on the perimeter and at the rim, the lobs from Jokic will be phenomenal. Playing between him and Jamal Murray and alongside Michael Porter Jr., like, that's a stud lineup. And Aaron Gordon's going to shine that much more. We'll appreciate him that much more because, A, will contribute to winning, and B, he's going to get easier shots. You know, when's the last time they had any competent playmakers in Orlando to help get Aaron Gordon easy shots and take advantage of all that athleticism? And then a couple quick notes just on Gordon anyway. He's shooting a career high from three, 37.5%. He's already on a career high pace in free throw attempts per game at 4.2. He's on a career high pace in assists at 4.2 per game. He is a scorer and playmaker and a really capable defender. And as you point out, you got to deal with LeBron, you got to deal with Kawhi, you got to deal with these elite wings in the West. And I think it gives Denver great versatility, and defense is something that they badly, badly needed some help in.
I think Denver realized at this point of the season that they weren't good enough, that for several reasons, they were not among the best teams in the Western Conference. I don't know if Gordon and McGee makes them the best team in the Western Conference, but it pushes them closer to that threshold. And if there is a lingering issue with LeBron's ankle or AD is scuffling physically come playoff time, that door in the Western Conference to get to the finals is wide open. Like, Utah is the best team in the conference right now, but the Jazz are unproven. The Clippers, and we're going to get to them in a minute, still have holes on their team. I mean, there isn't a dominant team per se if the Lakers are not at full strength. So I love the decision by Denver to kind of take a big swing and acquire Aaron Gordon. The other team that took advantage of the fire sale that happened in Orlando today is the Chicago Bulls, who made something of a big swing of their own. They traded for Nick Vucevic, the all-star center with Orlando, also picked up Al Farouq Aminu by trading Otto Porter, Wendell Carter Jr., and two first-round picks back in return. That's a pretty significant package that the Bulls put together. Putting aside Porter, who's on an expiring contract, Carter is a decent young player, and two first-round picks are two first-round picks. In return, the Bulls get a 30-year-old all-star who they can now pair alongside Zach LaVine. What do you make of this deal for Chicago, Howard?
Let me just really quickly hit the Orlando side of it, because you and I have talked about them a couple times, and I've gone
well,
on
Give me Chicago first, because I want to get into Orlando in a second. Give me Chicago first.
All right, so listen, Chicago under new management with Arturis Karnasovas and his group, Mark Eversley, this is the first major stamp they've put on it. And clearly what they're saying is, it's time to make the playoffs, guys. It's time. Zach LaVine wasn't going to get there on his own, wasn't going to get the Bulls there on his own. He needed help. I love this for him. Vucevic takes some scoring pressure off, gives him better spacing, and just brings some balance to that offense. And as promising as Wendell Carter Jr. has looked at times, you know, it's been, I think, a frustrating run the last couple of years for the Bulls, not just his injuries, but between him and Markkanen, two guys who both have some clear abilities and potential stardom written on them from the day they were drafted, and neither of them has been able to kind of break through and have the consistency at one time that looked like a really nice kind of 1-2 punch in the front court. It hasn't worked out that way. Now you're guaranteed. Vooch is a little later in his career, that's fine, but here's a guy who, you know, can score in a variety of ways. He's one of the best scorers at that position in the NBA. And it's going to make life that much easier for Zach LaVine. And the Bulls are right there in the running. Like the forever, generous Eastern Conference, you're never out of the running. As we speak, they're 10th at 19-24, but they're a game and a half out of the eighth spot. They could easily get up into the middle of the pack. They could easily go up to, you know, where the Knicks are at six as a 500 team. Excuse me, Knicks and Heat are tied at 500. The Hornets are fourth at a game over 500 right now. So, like, the sky, I don't want to say the sky's the limit for the Bulls, but there's a lot of room to move up the standings, and I think that they will with Vooch in the fold.
There's also something to be said about, you know, just winning, or at least competing for something. And the Bulls were okay this year, but Vucevic clearly brings them a lot closer to that playoff berth. And, you know, getting into the playoffs with this young team, I think, has real value. And Vucevic, Look, he's an excellent player, and he's under contract for two more years after this one, makes about $46 million, which is not a big number, but it's not some overwhelming number that is going to kill you, especially if his production stays the same over the next couple of years. And you can build around these guys, and you can see if you can sign free agents to Chicago, a great market, with two guys at key positions that are locked up for the foreseeable future. I love this trade for the Bulls. I mean, first-round picks, look, again, they have value, but you know, they're oftentimes their value, you know, is overblown in a way. It's like, oh, I got a first round pick. I don't want to give up a first round pick. Well, what does that first round pick turn into? Like, what are you getting in exchange for using that first round pick? Oftentimes, it's not great value, especially if you're picking in the teens and early 20s. So, great deal, I think, for Chicago in getting Nick Vucevic. So, let's get into Orlando here, and I'll let you go first because the Magic. Like, what's the over-under on number of games they win the rest of the season? Like, 3.5? Like, I think that's a fair number. I mean, that's going to be... That was already
Hold on. Can you name their starting lineup as of right now? Because it just hit me. I don't think I can.
I was following Terrence Ross on Twitter, and he was just, like, tweeting out, like, weird stuff, like, as all his guys around him were getting traded away. I think he had one of those... I'm the captain now. Yeah, Captain Phillips, is that a name? I don't know. It was like one of those.
Go ahead on Orlando.
Props
to Terrence Ross for having a good sense of humor about it all. I cannot name their starting lineup as we sit here right now. I'd have to actually start using the Googles. I can do nothing but praise the Magic and applaud them at this point because I've been ranting on this podcast and elsewhere for a while now. They needed to get off the treadmill of mediocrity. Whatever it was, I think I found nine years, one winning season, I think it was, at 42-40. Like, this team was never going anywhere with this group. And these are all good players. This is the weird thing about it, Chris, but this is the way the NBA works. Evan Fournier, really nice pickup for the Boston Celtics. Aaron Gordon, great pickup for the Denver Nuggets, as we've covered. Vooch, great pickup for the Bulls. These are not bad players. These are all very good players. It's just that collectively they were going nowhere because there was not that one transformative player or a couple of all-stars who could get you somewhere. And together they were never going to get anywhere. And in the East, as forgiving as the East is, as mediocre as the East is, they still weren't in the running for a playoff spot this year. And I don't care what you think of Markel Fultz's, you know, renaissance, pseudo-renaissance in Orlando, or the possibilities of Jonathan Isaac becoming defensive player of the year. Like, yes, those are good young players, but adding them back in and taking away all the injuries the Magic had, they still were not going to be any better than, like, a low playoff team in the East with a very low ceiling. It was time. It was past time to do this. So props to Jeff Weltman and John Hammond and to that franchise for finally recognizing it's time to blow it up and start over. They got a bunch of picks today. They got some decent young players. Maybe Wendell Carter Jr. blooms there. I'm absolutely fine with, and I have to imagine most Magic fans are fine with, going ahead and doing the teardown in the present to give themselves a potentially brighter future and just give themselves a blank canvas.
I agree with what you're saying, but the Magic just did the easy part. Like, offloading Gordon and Fournier and Vucevic and getting picks back in return, that's the easy part. We see teams do that stuff all the time. The hard part now begins. And I think this is the point, Howard, where it's worth pointing out that Markel Fultz and Jonathan Isaac are not Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Like, those two guys coming back are not going to make the Magic a playoff contender next year. It just doesn't work that way.
No.
Isaac is fine, but he's had one healthy season, and he just had his second major injury. Yeah. So we have to kind of wait and see what he looks like when he comes back from this latest injury. Fultz reclaimed his career in Orlando. Good for him. But is still a starter, but like, where would you? I don't know where I'd rank him amongst the starting point guards this league. Top 15, maybe?
No.
Top half?
No.
Top 20?
I don't think he's top 15.
All right, top 20 then somewhere. I mean, but my point is, like, he's not a high level guy yet. He's saved his career in Orlando. He's fine.
Yes.
So, like, this is quite literally a blank slate they have right now in Orlando. They're going to have a whole lot of cap flexibility, you know, to do whatever they want to do in the years to come. Not that anybody's coming to Orlando for that matter, you know, to. They have a hard time getting free agents anyway, much less when you're this bad. So it's now on Jeff Weltman and John Hammond to draft well and to use these draft picks and hit. And they better hit because, I mean, you look at the Magic right now, it's probably at least 5 years before they're any good. I mean, I feel bad for Steve Clifford, who has got to be tearing whatever's left of his hair out of his head at this moment. Like, I mean, Steve Clifford is a guy that – wants to make the playoffs every single year, you know, is a great coach. And now he's going to be coaching a team that has no chance of making the playoffs at any point, probably the next 2 or 3 years. So good on Orlando, as you said, for doing what needed to be done, getting off the treadmill. But here we go. This is where it begins.
Like, yeah.
If you don't hit on these, same thing like with Houston. Like, if you don't hit on these draft picks, if you don't use your cap flexibility wisely, they are in a position now where they can be part of trades, where they absorb a bad contract and get another draft pick, get back in return. We saw Memphis do this recently. Teams do this all the time when they're in this position. So you can be strategic with that cap space. Of course, Oklahoma City is like your competition there. They're probably going to be doing that for a couple of years as well. But this is where the challenge begins, Howard. And I just want to be very clear on what Fultz and Isaac are. Like, they are fine young talents, but not, I wouldn't name either one of them as, you know, one or two options on a winning team. Maybe three and four, not one and two.
I totally agree. And it was irritating in recent weeks to hear the, well, if they were healthy and, oh, they've got these guys coming back, because I think it was being made out like, oh, no, they actually do have some promising high-level talent. We don't know what Jonathan Isaac will eventually be. Yes, he had Defensive Player of the Year potential before the ACL, and maybe he still will. But offensively, there's not a ton there. And Fultz, you know, we can't get too carried away. It is really great to see, and I'm very happy for him, after all that he went through in Philly, to have reclaimed his career. But he's a long, long ways from being an elite difference maker in this league. So yeah, you cannot, even if you were the most hopeful Orlando Magic fan, you could not put too much stock in the idea that those two coming back and that alone was going to somehow get you into playoff contention or make you a high level playoff team. They absolutely, this is overdue. They needed to hit the reset button. And you're right. The harder stuff is yet to come, but first you have to have the vision and the willingness to do this in the first place. And it's not easy to do. Like, it's easy for us on the outside to always say, blow it up. They're the ones who, one, to your point about Steve Clifford, he's got to deal with the losing and just the starting from scratch. That's tough on a coaching staff. It's tough on a franchise. When fans are allowed in buildings again at full capacity, you have to worry about selling tickets. Like, that's part of this too. It's an entertainment product. So blowing it up means sacrificing some gate and some fan interest in the short term. But it is not an easy decision, but it is the easier part than the rebuild. The rebuild is definitely the harder part, but this was necessary.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll see where they go from here. Let's run through a few other things real quick. The Celtics, they were in the mix for Aaron Gordon. They wind up with Evan Fournier. I expect Danny Ainge to get pilloried pretty good for, you know, once again, not executing a big deal. But I got to tell you, I like this deal for Boston. I mean, the Celtics, they've had some chemistry issues this year, but their biggest problem has been, over the last couple of years, more talent has gone out than has come in. They lose Kyrie Irving, they flip him for Kemba Walker, who's had some good moments, but injuries have kind of derailed him over the last 6 to 8 months. Al Horford leaves, and nothing comes back. Gordon Hayward leaves, and nothing comes back. Now, you have Evan Fournier coming in, and they're not sending anything of substance back. Just a couple of second-round draft picks. And Jeff Teague, I guess, going back in return. But he was just a fringe part of that rotation, as is. Fournier is an excellent scorer. Like, Fournier averages close to 20 points per game. He's an efficient scorer. He's a good three-point shooter. Like, he is going to be an effective part of the Celtics rotation right away. Because for the Celtics, you know, outside of, like, Peyton Pritchard, they weren't getting any consistent production from any of their young guys. Like, Aaron Nesmith, not consistent. Romeo Langford hasn't played. I don't even, like, where in the world is Romeo Langford? Should be a game at this point in Boston. Across the board, they just haven't gotten, you know, Semi Ojeleye, you know, situational. Evan Fournier is going to be able to step in either as a starter or coming off the bench and be a third scoring option opposite Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. He will supplement Kemba Walker in that backcourt. I love this deal for the Celtics. They didn't give up anything. They got back a real scorer. They're going to have to deal with Fournier's contract in the offseason. Can they re-sign him? Do they re-sign him? All that good stuff. But in a vacuum, short term, this deal makes the Celtics, I think, appreciably better.
It definitely is an improvement. they were desperate for anybody.
Yeah, kind of a long pause there. You seem like you're about to tell me I'm wrong there, Beck.
No, did you say appreciably better? I mean,
it's a 20 point per game scorer. You added for nothing. Like,
yeah, no.
I know it's a 20 point per game scorer on a crap team, but you added a 20 point per game scorer.
One of the things we've discussed many times on this podcast is the fact that one of the Celtics' issues, aside from, you know, Kemba's knee and everything else and COVID and everything, you had four guys in, you know, Jalen, Jason, Kemba, Marcus Smart, who make up the core of your team and who are all high-level guys and really important guys, and the drop-off from them to everybody else was just way too steep. The rotation was just severely lacking in depth and in guys who can make an impact, and Fournier does. So at a bare minimum, you now have another guy who you can run the offense through at times. To your point, yes, he can get you 20 something points a night. He can run screen roll. He's a talented player. Does he do enough? I mean, the thing is, the only reason I don't go crazy for and not embracing appreciably better is the bar is
so
high.
You're not frothing for Fournier?
I'm not frothing for Fournier. Is that a hashtag?
Could be.
It just, the bar is high in the East is the thing. Like, it's right now, it's okay. Yes, they're better. They're better for getting him, and it was a good trade, and they didn't have to give up anything really to get him. That part's all great. But you're aiming for what is the formula to take down the Bucks, the Nets, the Sixers, and the Heat, for that matter. Is it enough to keep you in the running with those other teams? That's the harder part. And look, the Nuggets gave more to Orlando for Aaron Gordon than I think the Celtics could have. I don't know that they had the right
pieces. That's the big part of this all this hour. Yeah. Like the Nuggets, as you said at the top, they decided they wanted Aaron Gordon. They gave Gary Harris. They gave RJ Hampton, who I think is an interesting prospect, and that first round pick. It would have been tough, I think, for the Celtics to have. They could have beaten it, but it would have cost them a lot.
And if it was going to cost them one of their, you know, high level rotation guys, if it was going to cost them Marcus Smart, then I don't know that I want to do it. You know, you're not, now it's, you know, reshuffling deck chairs on the Titanic almost. It's not really moving you ahead. You almost have to get something for nothing. And that's what the Nuggets did. Like, Gary Harris was a nominal player for them at this point. RJ Hampton wasn't, you know, critical to their present. That pick, not critical. So they got Aaron Gordon without having to give up anything that hurt their rotation. The Celtics would have had to hurt themselves probably to get Aaron Gordon. And so getting Fournier is a nice fallback. They're definitely better. You're right. And I think this will help stabilize them at a minimum. Whether it can catapult them ahead of some of those other teams atop the East, or whether this is just step one toward getting their next season, you know, re-sign Fournier and make some other move to, you know, improve the starting lineup the first part of the bench. Maybe that's the next step in the offseason. I just don't know if for this season it's going to get them where they really want to go, which is conference finals.
All right, let's talk about the Clippers. As I and others had reported during the week, the Clippers were canvassing the NBA looking for point guard help. They wind up with Rajon Rondo, swapping Rondo for Lou Williams in that backcourt. Lou Williams, I guess in a vacuum, is a better player than Rondo, longtime Sixth Man of the Year winner, still a productive scorer in this league. But my argument in favor of this deal for the Clippers, Howard, is that LA needed what Rondo can do more than what Williams can do. They needed playmaking. They have got so few playmakers on that team. Patrick Beverley, for all his defensive talents, and he's a decent shot maker, is not a playmaker. Lou Williams is a scorer and not a playmaker. That team ranks right around the bottom third of the NBA in assists per game. Their glaring weakness was playmaking. So now they add Rondo, who, look, let's face it, there's two versions of Rondo. There's what we see now in the regular season, and there's what we have seen year after year in the playoffs. Playoff Rondo is a real thing. Like, it has been a real thing for most of his career. If the Clippers get playoff Rondo, this can be a difference-making move for them, because playoff Rondo is a guy that makes shots. He's low turnover. He makes the right plays. He makes life a lot easier for Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, just like he did for LeBron in this past postseason. So not a high-profile move for the Clippers, but I think one that can make them better.
Yes, he is 35. He is averaging, I think, career lows on just about every statistical category. And hasn't
been injured, of course. Been injured for much of the season.
Yeah. But been injured in part probably because he's 35 and has a lot of miles on him. But look, if we can assume health for Rajon Rondo, and if we can assume that there is still more to him there than what we've seen in Atlanta this season so far, and we can assume that he can bring some of what he did for the Lakers last year in helping them win a championship, then yes, it's a phenomenal pickup. Because one of the things there was a list of things that we've all talked about the Clippers needed: playmaking, leadership, and hopefully some more scoring from that position too. Rondo's not going to bring that, but the leadership. We'll see if the defense is still there, right? Like Rondo's been riding, on his defensive reputation for years, long past when he was still an elite defender. But he can still bring it at times, and he's still got all that great length and the long arms, and can be a difference maker when he's fully locked in and motivated, as he usually is in the playoffs. That's why there is a playoff Rondo. But not necessarily the vocal leader type, and he's not Kyle Lowry, who, again, would have been the ideal pickup if they could have swung a deal for him. But Rondo is going to bring that toughness and experience, and I think he will hold guys to account, and I think he does bring the playmaking that, as we've talked about so many times, they desperately, desperately needed. And so he is an upgrade. Is he a starting point guard who plays 25, 30 minutes a game still with the starting unit, opens and closes games? I don't know. We'll see. But the tag team of him and Pat Beverly gives you a lot of tenacity at that position. And I think at a minimum, yeah, they'll be closing games with Rondo. I'm just not sure how much he has, left in the tank. He was averaging 15 minutes a game for the Hawks. And some of that's the injuries and some of that's the glut of guards. But he's a necessary upgrade, put it that way. Was he as good of an upgrade as maybe Ricky Rubio or Kyle Lowry or somebody else might have been? I don't know. But he's definitely an upgrade.
Look, until playoff Rondo ceases to exist, I'm still going to believe in playoff Rondo. And I watched playoff Rondo in Boston when he was younger. I watched playoff Rondo in New Orleans when he was a little bit older. I watched playoff Rondo last year with the Lakers. We saw him with the Bulls. Everywhere he goes, save for perhaps Dallas, when his team gets into the postseason, he winds up stepping up his game. He hates the moniker, but it's apt. Like, it fits. He has been better in the playoffs than he's been in the regular season. So, until I see otherwise, I'm going to believe that there's another gear to Rajon Rondo in the playoffs, and I think he's going to step up and be an asset for the Clippers. I don't know if that moves them back into title contention. I believe they were a cut below before this trade deadline, but I think it makes them a little bit better.
How about this? As we've transitioned from Denver to the Clippers and transitioning to the end of this discussion, did either the Nuggets or Clippers get closer to being able to knock off a fully healthy, fully functioning Laker team? And if so, which of them, who's the bigger threat right now? The Nuggets or the Clippers?
I think both got closer. Don't know who the bigger threat is. Probably would say the Clippers, but it's close.
Yeah. I think probably the Clippers also. I think probably the Clippers also. I want to see, this is the fun exercise, right? Like Aaron Gordon trying to deal with LeBron. That's clearly going to be part of his job there. Clippers already had Kawhi and Paul George to throw at LeBron. We never got to see that in the playoffs last year because the Clippers flamed out too soon. And it always comes down to that to me. Like it's not the playoffs are about so much more than that. But at a certain point, it's always the mental exercise is, all right, you want to knock off the Lakers? Great. What are you doing with Anthony Davis? What are you doing with LeBron James? Who you got? And so, because the Clippers have Kawhi and Paul George, I still kind of lean their way. But the Nuggets are really potent, man.
Yeah, they're deep. They can score. They'll be a tough out, no question. Let's finish, Howard, with the buyout market, which we're on to at this point. And already LaMarcus Aldridge has been bought out by the San Antonio Spurs. We're expecting Andre Drummond to follow suit. These are two impact players. And wherever they sign, I think they have the potential to change a playoff race and change the dynamic of a team. Woj reported that Miami is the front runner for Aldridge. That makes some sense, especially since Miami moved Kelly Olynyk in that deal to acquire Victor Oladipo. That leaves a hole in that front court that Aldridge could conceivably fill. The Lakers would be in the mix, I would assume. The Suns, a team Aldridge almost signed with back in 2015, they could be in the mix. With Drummond, I would think the Lakers are a front runner because he could start with LA if he winds up getting bought out by the Cavaliers. But I, you know, and others have reported this, and I've heard the same thing. Like, the Knicks are interesting because the Knicks, I think, would not only offer Drummond the end-of-the-year salary, I think they would also look to sign him to a second year, which you can do. Like, the Knicks have cap space for next year. So if the Knicks come with the kind of offer Drummond's looking for in a second year, they could swoop in and, you know, grab Andre Drummond for their team for the rest of the year. What do you think? What do you think of both these guys and the impact they could make on the playoff run?
So our colleague Chris Herring had an interesting piece this morning in the morning shootaround on SI.com about whether Andre Drummond's best talent, rebounding, is still valuable enough in today's NBA. And it's a real big question. And there's a reason Andre Drummond is heading toward a buyout instead of having been traded. There's a reason that the Cavaliers, a terrible team, were still just as terrible having acquired him a year ago. He was on bad Pistons teams. Then he was on a bad Cavaliers team. And the only teams that wanted him were bad teams. And now he's going to be bought out. And yeah, if you sign him for the minimum, that's fine. But is he really contributing to winning? He's, for a center, he's terrible at the basket in terms of his efficiency on at the rim shooting. Rebounding is important as a team. It is not important that you have one guy who can get all of them, right? Like, you need to win the rebounding battle at times. But if you collectively get as many rebounds, and I think there was even the stat, if I recall correctly, that the Pistons rebounded just as well or better with him off the court as on, which is kind of a strange stat for a guy who's the leading, one of the leading rebounders of this last 5 years. It's a strange thing, but rebounding on its own is not essential from a single player. So what is he doing for the Lakers that's moving them forward? Now, Montrezl Harrell is undersized. Drummond's a big body. Marc Gasol is on fumes. So I could see him with the Lakers getting a lot of minutes and being productive. And when you're playing alongside Anthony Davis and LeBron James, you're going to look that much better. Put him in Brooklyn even, perhaps. Put him on a couple other teams. But the Knicks? Like, I hope for the Knicks' sake they don't do this. It makes no sense to me. I don't know how great Mitchell Robinson's actually going to be, but he's more in the mold of today's center in the NBA. If you're not going to be a stretch five, and neither he nor Drummond is, then you need to be bouncy, a rim protector, and mobile so that you can switch on the screen roll. Andre Drummond doesn't do any of those things. He's not a rim protector. He's not as able or as agile as Mitchell Robinson is in terms of defending away from the basket. So you're going to invest in him? You're going to give him a multi-year contract when you already have I don't want to say a better young center, but a more suitable young center sitting right there for less. And he's going to come due too. You're going to have to pay Mitchell Robinson at some point. But I don't see this at all. I do not understand it. If the Knicks go that path, I would not understand that move. And you're a young rebuilding team. Every big contract you hand out better be to somebody who clearly moves you ahead. And I don't think Andre Drummond does.
All right. I think we covered all the bases there, with apologies to Sixers fans who want to hear about the impact of George Hill, Blazers fans who want to talk about Norman Powell. We'll do that in a subsequent podcast. But for now, I think that'll wrap it up, Howard.
I think we covered the most critical pieces of this. Yes, with all due respect to the aforementioned George Hill.
On to the buyout market, my friend.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.